You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Matt Chandler, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dehati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
Hey, welcome to another episode of the New Churches Podcast. Michael Crawford and I are co-hosting together. He leads the Send Network for Maryland, Delaware. And today, our guest is Dean and Sarah. He planted City Church in his hometown of Tallahassee, Florida. We've talked in a prior episode that Elmer Towns once said, go back and plant a church in your hometown. And I wouldn't be surprised if you took a course where Liberty University, where he said that, because that's where Dean went to school for his undergrad, MA in Theological Studies from Midwestern. He's written several helpful books, and we're going to talk some about the one of them called The Unsaved Christian, which is a fascinating title that we're going to jump into as well. Let me mention to you, if you're listening to this podcast, you know that we love to share resources with you. If you go to newchurches.com, you'll actually find helpful information, including a new course with Dan Darling. And the course is a brand new course on basically online interaction as well. All the courses at newchurches.com are free. I want to encourage you to go check them out there, newchurches.com. So, Dean, we're going to jump into the conversation with you because the phrase unsaved Christian has so many questions that come from that, and I'm sure you've answered them a few times. But you're a church planter in the South. Tallahassee is... It's hard to explain to people who don't know the area, but it's kind of lower Alabama-ish at times. It feels a little bit, it's got rural parts of it. But you wrote this book, The Unsaved Christian, that maybe addresses some of that, but I also see some of this in Chicagoland and beyond. So what's the problem you're trying to address with The Unsaved Christian?
Well, the biggest problem is I'm trying to get people to shift their thinking about cultural Christianity, to see it as an evangelism issue rather than a discipleship issue. I think oftentimes people get frustrated with cultural Christianity in their community. I mean, these folks would just get it together when it comes to church and just get serious about Jesus. But really, I think our mindset will change. We'll be a lot more frustrated if we see it actually as a mission field rather than people who simply just don't get it. So why I do think it applies here in Tallahassee, where I live, which I grew up about 10 miles from the Georgia line, just for perspective, yeah. For people. Also at Elmer Towns for several classes at Liberty, which you mentioned earlier.
Nice.
But even in some of our largest, populated areas outside of the South, the majority of the people would not call themselves atheists or agnostics.
Right.
A lot of people would say, yes, they are Christians, but their reason for being a Christian would have nothing to do with what actually I would say constitutes saving faith, which is why I call them unsaved Christians.
So Ed, you've planted in the Northeast and the South.
Sure.
What are the cultural differences you've noticed in the average person's view of what it means for them to be right with God?
Yeah. So I grew up outside New York City, Irish Catholic household, but nominally Catholic. The Catholic Church was the church we didn't go to on Sundays. And so I'm a northerner, northeasterner, moved to the South. One of the things I noticed, I think probably both Catholics and maybe Baptists, those would be the predominant groups in the regions I were, would object to this characterization. But in both cases, there was this Christian identification. Catholics call themselves Christians in the Northeast, Baptists, you know, where there's more Baptists than people in Texas, you know, they called themselves Christians in the South. But to use Dean's term, not just Dean's terms, but they both lacked saving faith. They didn't know, but they knew there was a God. They just didn't think they could know him personally. And maybe they knew he wrote a book. They just didn't think they could understand it. And so that unsaved Christian, again, I want to come back to the question. I want to push a little on the title like others have with you. Because are they Christians? I mean, that's part of the point of your book. But let's get, Mike, from you. You're West Coast. We grew up in the West Coast. Different, same, similar?
Way different.
Okay, tell me about it.
Yeah, way different. I think we're going to be even almost more in this category of once you define what an unsaved Christian is. Because I think the West Coast is, you know, it's the left coast, and they're too laid back to be concerned about most anything.
So the labels were in the Northeast, it was Catholic Christian, or in the South might be Baptist or Methodist Pentecostal. That's not as much in the West Coast.
No. Okay. When I moved to the Northeast, to Baltimore, to plant, and now I've spent the last 13 years in the Northeast, and then being in denominational work, introduced to the South, culturally, it is so different. I mean, people are so much more religious in the South than they are the Northeast, but the Northeast still has systems and structures and religion, like the Catholic Church.
Yeah, totally.
But then when you go to the East, I mean, to West Coast, you don't, you can't even smell it. You can barely see it.
Okay, so this kind of leads to our question, Dean. So the full title, by the way, is The Unsaved Christian, Reaching Cultural Christianity with the Gospel. So, area I grew up, the area where you grew up, people still, I mean, all around the country, the majority of people still call themselves Christian. But one of the things, when I write on cultural Christianity or cultural Christians, I literally have people mad at me because I call them cultural Christians. I say, well, they're not Christians, which is sort of the point of what you're saying and explaining. So how do you explain the title, Unsaved Christian? Isn't that a contradiction in terms?
It is, and it's supposed to be, because, again, what you said, they will all consider themselves to be Christians if they were asked. And by that, they just simply mean they're not atheist or agnostic, Muslim, Buddhist, Hindu. They more define being a Christian by what they aren't. So since they aren't any of those other things, they consider themselves to be Christians. Think of someone who maybe is getting ready to fill out a survey or some kind of form, and you ask your name, social security, you know, height, weight, race, and they'll ask you to indicate your religion. Well, you go down the list and you'll say, well, okay, I know I'm not nothing. I know I'm not Jewish for a fact. I know I'm not Muslim for a fact. I know I'm not Buddhist for a fact. Well, okay, yeah, I believe in God. I'm kind of a spiritual person. I'm Christian. But Jesus says, many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord, didn't we prophesy in your name, cast out demons in your name, perform miracles in your name? And he said, plainly, I'll tell them, away from me, you workers of lawlessness. I never knew you. So if our reasons for believing we are Christians are things other than the work of Christ on our behalf, I can't find anywhere in the scriptures where that would constitute as saving faith. What I want church planners to think about and church leaders to think about is, especially in my denominational tradition, so much of our evangelism training has been geared towards atheists or agnostics or skeptics who we don't know, like strangers. And again, I like what Moody said. You know, I like my way of doing evangelism, but their way of not doing evangelism. So I'm a more the merrier kind of guy. I'm not criticizing anything. I'm just saying that most of our evangelistic contexts are people we already know, or at least are acquaintances with, who believe themselves to be fine because they either see themselves as good people from a Christian family or not atheists. So we need to understand the mission field right in front of so many of us, not exclusively. I know there's some areas where there's an exception, but for many of us, right, we think that evangelism means atheists and agnostics or another religion, when I think unsaved Christianity is very ripe for a harvest.
And Dean, what are some more characteristics, if we were to kind of personify this unsaved Christian, what are some of their characteristics that we could be looking for?
There's probably 15, but I always focus on about three. And I think these three are really helpful. And the first is generic belief in God. It's a lowercase g God, sort of big guy upstairs, or maybe a divine Santa Claus, grandfather figure, Yoda from Star Wars. I mean, those kind of ideas of who God is, a good luck charm, you know, Jesus take the wheel kind of understanding. So that's a big one. So that's really complicated because they already believe in God. So it's almost threatening or offensive to suggest to them they aren't Christians when their identity has been in the fact they believe in something. So that generic lowercase g God can be very complicated because it's not actually the God of the Bible. The second one I would say are morals. They see themselves to be really good people. And you know, we're great folks. You know, we keep up with just kind of whatever suburban morality looks like in 2022 where they happen to live. As long as you kind of keep up with the moral Joneses, you know, then you're okay. And people who are bad people in their eyes are like really bad people. All right, like life sentence kind of people, dictators, you know, those sort of things. Everybody else is, we're good folks. And so I say you have to get them actually lost in order to get them saved. They see themselves as fine, which I think makes evangelism in the South very complicated because there isn't a clear starting point. Oftentimes in more secular cultures, the starting point is unbelief. That is, they know they're not Christians. But here where I live, oftentimes people think they're fine again because of what they're not, what religion they're not a part of. And the third thing I would say is heritage. They often will cite their Christian nana, you know, their Christian family. They own a Bible that was given them at their mainline church when they were in first grade. They, you know, was claimed to be Catholic. They might even have some sort of religious relic at their house. They decorate for Christmas, have a nativity scene on their manger that was given to them by their favorite aunt when she passed away. You know, just all it's all this heritage idea. So am I a Christian? Of course I am. Why? Because I believe in God. I'm a good person, and I come from a Christian family. But notice what I did not mention in those three things. The name Jesus didn't come out of my mouth. So these folks think they can be Christians because of all those other things.
Yeah, that's really good. Ed, you've done all the statistical work. Have you found ways that you can kind of get to the heart of a person's relationship with God and help them maybe kind of give them a pathway towards biblical salvation in light of these types of characteristics?
Yeah, I think Dean's hitting right on it, that there is a sense that there's a cultural expression of Christianity, in Christendom itself, but being in Christendom, which again, we might be in a post-Christendom world, but again, keep in mind that, you know, high 60% of people still use the word Christian to describe themselves in American context. It's different, you know, go around Canada's a few points less, the low 60s, the UK, high 50s, Australia, you know, mid 50s, New Zealand, actually high 40s. But in all those places, I mean, still all kinds of people use the term to describe themselves. So it is tricky to say what makes a cultural Christian and what's not. And I wouldn't, and Dean doesn't say, I can look at them and say, that's a cultural Christian, that's not a Christian, that's you know, so it's not like real or fake Christian. But we can acknowledge that there's a broad number of people who have a positive enough inclination towards the Christian faith that they would name their tradition after it. And I really like what Dean's saying, is that this is an evangelistic opportunity. Matter of fact, I would actually say that, like, post-COVID, you know, and we've got to figure out what that means, but whatever we're in now, I mean, there's a great opportunity for a whole lot of people who use the word Christian to describe and define themselves to reach them. But I would say the gospel message is going to be communicated. It's the same gospel message, but just as Paul was different when he was at Pisidian Antioch than he was at Lystra, than he was at Athens, you're going to communicate differently to that cultural Christian. So let's talk some about that, Dean. So you know, maybe it's not, you know, Tim Keller's book for skeptics, which I've recommended a whole lot of people, because these people aren't skeptics. They're just not, they just haven't responded. So what does it look like to evangelize in that context, to share the gospel to that cultural Christian?
Yeah, well, you're dealing with people who at best are indifferent. You know, yeah, we're Christians and it doesn't really mean much. I think it was Don Carson who said that people want enough of Jesus to be personally identified with, but not enough where it inconveniences them. Well, that can be a discipleship issue. This goes beyond that. These are people that oftentimes just don't know the gospel. I went to church my entire life on Sunday, unless we were sick or out of town. Every single Sunday, we prayed before dinner. I'd be, you know, God is great, God is good, let us thank him for our food. I'd say that every single night. I had the Lord's Prayer memorized, but I never had anyone actually tell me that I was a sinner who needed to be saved. And the only Savior's name was Jesus Christ. I was told to be loving like Jesus, to care about people like Jesus, you know, be brave like Daniel in the lion's den, you know, don't run from God like Jonah, you know, sort of things like that. But I was never actually told I needed to be saved until I went to a Fellowship of Christian Athletes retreat. So I would say that maybe the last marker, I talked about belief, morals, and heritage. The fourth marker, there was a four horsemen of cultural Christianity. It might be just ignorance. The people are just clueless, and they don't attach the Christian faith to anything that needs saving. Now, they all believe they're going to heaven. There's no data for this. It's just a field test. I believe that the most common religion in America, most prominent religion in America, is good people go to heaven when they die.
Yeah, I'd say that.
And in terms of what is heaven, they don't know. What's the point? Not sure. But we know that Uncle Bill is there right now, fishing at the big bass lake in the sky. You know, and their reason for believing that is because he was a great guy. Yeah. That's why they think that. You know, he's playing 18 holes in heaven right now, you know, because he was a great guy. So it really just is a lot of ignorance. So I think one of the main ways we have to do evangelism with cultural Christians is to expose them to something different, where they actually know,
yeah,
this is not what I have been believing or seeing.
Yeah, the unsaved. Now, interesting fact. I don't know if it's true in Baltimore. Maybe probably may be different. In my, like, in New York and Chicago, kind of my background, we didn't say saved as much. We said, like, born again. So the Christians were in the born again category, the not born again. The born againers, I guess, is what people would say there as well. But Jesus came to seek and save the lost, and I love that. So I guess the question I would have is, if we're approaching somebody in the North, it might say, if you're unsaved, that might not resonate as much with them. But how do you help a person who is a cultural Christian to understand, to use again term, biblical terminology, that they're lost, they're in need of Jesus, they're in need of responding to the gospel. When, you know, I often say that they get, you know, we're all talking about like vaccines. Let me bring up vaccines on the podcast. Let's see if we bring that up. But, you know, you get inoculated against something, they give you a weakened or deadened version of the actual thing that builds up immunities against it. So you're, so I think a whole lot of people have been inoculated against the truths of the gospel, inoculated against truths of the gospel, because they just, they kind of got enough resistance now because they had enough religion in their childhood. How do you help them understand that without Christ, they're lost and they need to respond by grace and through faith?
So what makes it complicated is it can get very defensive very quickly.
Yeah.
Because a cultural Christian is first going to think that you're declaring to them they need to be like you. Like, I'm a really good Christian and you're not a very good Christian, oh, so good. Step it up a little bit. I like to say the only difference between in a cultural Christian's eyes between themselves and an actual believer is, hey, Ed's just really into his religion. I'm a Christian too. Ed's just really into it. He gets asked to pray at Thanksgiving because he says good prayers. So that's kind of how they see the difference. So what I try to do is I try to get them to talk about their faith they already claim to have. So in a, again, this is not strangers and skeptics. We approach at a gas station and say, if you die tomorrow, where would you go? We're not talking about that kind of evangelism. These are people usually you already know in your context. So I want them to talk about the faith they already claim they had. Maybe on, you know, September 11th, they put on their Facebook profile, God bless America, you know, or they'll ask for thoughts and prayers if someone is sick in their family, or if someone else passes away, they'll add on their Instagram post, you know, hey, praying for you guys. Even though they're not in church, they don't ever talk about faith outside of that, but they're indicating something there. So I just want to sit down with them over coffee or just over a conversation. And as we're talking about politics and football and how the kid's doing and those type of things, I say, hey, you know, I noticed that you posted the other day about, you know, praying for your friend. Just want to know, I'll be praying for your friend. Man, I've never talked about faith before. So I think that you claim to be a Christian. Tell me about that. Like, how did you become a believer? Tell me your sort of faith story. And it's not a gotcha back into a wall. It's an opportunity for them to talk. And you'll be shocked the answer you hear. It'll be nothing but kind of cultural Christian gibberish. They're going to talk about how they believe in God, how they're spiritual, how they're really good people, how they come from a Christian family. Guaranteed. And that opens you a window not to say, be more like me, but to say, hey, let me tell you my story and tie your story completely to what Christ has done for you. So to the point where they have to see Christianity as defined by Jesus and not something else. And this is going to sound oversimplified, but I think one of the greatest ways to reach a cultural Christian is to invite them to a gospel preaching church, because so oftentimes we'll see people saved out of cultural Christianity because they came to a church service here and went, oh my word, that is, I've never heard this in my life. Well, this is so different than the church I went to when I was seven. And they see the stark difference and they have to deal with it.
Okay. So in your, at the end of the book, you, some practical help for relating to mainline Protestants, Catholics, which is more of the space maybe I'm in. I guess you're more in a African-American community, probably African-American community, which could be, that's a whole different experience as well. Do you see that cultural Christianity at work there as well?
Yes, but it's much more robust.
Is it? Okay.
It's not, these three characteristics, I would say that's like Sunday school, child Sunday school. Because in the African-American tradition, Jesus is actually mentioned, his death, his resurrection, okay. The word of God. Yeah. It's way
but
more.
But even among people who are not
absolutely,
practicing
Christians? Okay. 1,000%. I could take you to funerals in the African-American community where if you were to parse it out and do spiritual MRIs, you may discover that people don't really believe in the death and life of Jesus and all that. But when they talk, you would never know the difference. It's way more cohesive and way more kind of, at least verbally, they can articulate
interesting.
The faith.
Oh, but not having a personal relationship.
Yes, exactly.
Just a greater cultural
awareness.
Right?
So it's this, what he's talking about right. On a whole nother level.
Okay. So in the closing of your book, you deal with practical help related to mainline Protestants, Catholics. We might talk about it in the African-American context or more, not seeking for you to be experts on, you to be expert on all things in all places, but what advice would you give, last question, for attempting to kind of share the gospel with someone who's part of a faith tradition, or maybe articulate some loose commitment to the faith tradition, And how might you engage them? Again, it's part of the end of the book, but tell us about that. Let me remind everyone, too, the book is The Unsaved Christian. Let me just remind you as well about that. But tell us the answer.
Yeah, I want them to see what the actual saving Christian faith understood in the gospel of Jesus Christ really actually is about. Like, beyond just, like, there's this guy named Jesus, and he was great, and he died on a cross, and there's this thing called Easter, and we get dressed up and go to Nana's for ham afterwards. Like, I want them to see it as a, I want them to fully understand that this faith that we claim is completely tied to his person and his work, and to actually explain what that is. And also, I get really kind of uneasy when people say, if you don't call for a response the moment you share your faith, you didn't really do evangelism. This is a long game kind of thing here. I mean, this is like several conversations, patience, you know, be willing to be labeled as a bad guy or judgmental for a minute, but just make sure that's not your spirit as going into it. It's a long game kind of idea, but I think we have to consistently compare what they are claiming to believe to actually what the gospel says and point it away from ourselves as much as possible. Because not to be a broken record, but we can remember their first instinct is going to be to think you're saying, be more like me.
Right.
I'm a good Christian, you're not. That's going to be the defense wall, because they think they're Christians too, even though they're a different faith tradition in terms of different segments of the Christian faith. But if their answer is not Jesus, then they're obviously, according to the scriptures, that's not a saving faith. So I would say you have to continue to hold up the differences and help them to see it over and over again in a long game, many conversations, not overwhelm their back them into a wall kind of way. And to really talk about your story, it's not apologetics in the cultural Christian context that's going to win someone to faith. It really is going to be because it's personal. And they're actually seeing your, especially if you came to Christ as someone who wasn't an atheist before, as someone who was an unsaved Christian before, and that's my story. So I'm able to tell them that progress of my life of what took place. It allowed me to move from someone who was a good kid from a good family who believed in God and went to church on Sunday to someone who actually believes and trusts in Christ. And that story right there, they have to come to grips with that because they'll see it as different. And they can't deny the fact that there's really a contradiction in their understanding of the Bible and Christianity and what you now as a believer are sharing. So I really think that's important.
Dean and Sarah has been our guests. The book is The Unsaved Christian, Reaching Cultural Christianity with the Gospel. Super helpful conversation today. I particularly like that part about not comparing, I'm the good Christian, you're the bad Christians. Good, great insights. And again, great insights in a whole lot of different cultural contexts where the vast majority of people still identify as Christian, use the term to identify themselves. Hopefully, church planners will find that helpful. If you found this podcast helpful, make sure you leave a review wherever you download your podcast, like, share, whatever it is in that platform that you use. We'd love to help get the word out as well. Thanks for listening to the New Churches podcast.
You've been listening to the New Churches podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com.